Hello again, I'm Armin Alney. There's plenty of evidence that Americans are overworking, not just out of necessity, but out of choice. At least they think they're making a choice. We'll hear about the many factors that encourage long hours and about the consequences for economic productivity and for success. That's later on To the Point. First, this story. There are more renters in Los Angeles than homeowners. And since the Great Recession, rents are 6% higher than they were before. That's made for a lot of frustration. Pauline O'Connor is editor for the real estate blog LACurbed.com, where she contributes to the feature called Rent Check. Pauline O'Connor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Warren. Hi.
Why are the rents so high?
Well, sort of getting, squeezed from both ends, renters, because, when the recession hit, then a lot of people were forced out of their homes, and then they had to become renters. And then, when the economy started bouncing back and then the housing market got really tight again, people have gotten sick of trying to compete. And, they're getting into bidding wars and competing with developers. And so they just decided, a lot of people decided kind of en masse to sit out the housing market. So that kind of adds up to a lot more people competing for not so many spaces.
What do you hear from the people you talk to and from your friends?
People are frustrated, but, you just have to keep looking. I think it's not as bad if you, it just requires a lot of patience and effort to find a place.
What's the high end? What's the low end?
The most desirable places, it's the same as you would find where people want to buy houses, same as renting, like the beach, Venice, Santa Monica, Marina Del Rey, that part of town. And then on the east side, Silver Lake, Echo Park, Highland Park, those are hot too. So Los Feliz is very hot. But if people are willing to look, in Glendale or Burbank or North Hollywood, you can still find some deals there.
Glendale, Burbank, North Hollywood. Where does it get really reasonable?
Let's see, probably the Valley. Oh, actually, Koreatown, you can find some bargains in Koreatown for sure, mid-city, Pico, Union.
And if you want to go by the beach, what's the high end? What are the average rents out there, or is there such a thing?
Things are renting probably, someplace decent, like a one-bedroom would be around $2,500.
Wow. For a one-bedroom apartment? And what about the deals you can make in Koreatown or Glendale or Burbank?
You can get a nice, kind of vintage, with character apartment for, $1,700 in Koreatown, say.
So there's a big range.
Yeah, but I'm saying, a nice place that has, crown molding and the, nice detailed built-ins and things like that. Really cheap. I mean, you can find a cheap place, you can find a place for $1,100 that's, it's just not all that nice or big.
Pauline O'Connor, editor for LACurbed.com. Mark Alston is a real estate broker. He works particularly in minority communities. Mark Alston, thanks a lot for being on our show.
Oh, you're welcome.
Earlier, Pauline O'Connor mentioned bidding wars that people get into. What about institutional investors? What role are they playing in all this?
They've played a major role, especially in the last 2 years, 2 to 3 years. They bought up properties, single-family properties that we would not normally see them buy, and repurposed them for renting. The rents are relatively reasonable, and it has, and with the foreclosure market, a lot of people lost their houses. So there's just so much demand, there's so much pressure on finding rentals that the prices are just going up. We're seeing prices going up every month.
Why is it a good investment to be a landlord?
It depends on the property you buy. Over time, property will always gain value. So you're going to have equity appreciation. We have downturns periodically. But over time, property will gain value. The tax write-off helps if you need it. And then you do have some income from the rental.
On the other hand, you have to deal with the renter, and you have to maintain the place.
Absolutely. And depending on the neighborhood, I was listening to your previous speaker talk about the different neighborhoods. Depending on the neighborhood depends on the amount of maintenance that you have.
So where are the neighborhoods where this is happening the most, where institutional people are coming in, buying up lots of of houses. I understand some of them really do buy a lot of houses.
You know, Blackstone, I think they've bought $7.5 billion worth of properties in the last 3 years or so. They're buying in the average-type neighborhood, inner-city areas mostly, but average-type neighborhoods. They're looking for the average borrower, the average renter, the person who may or may not be able to buy right now, and they're appealing to them. They market their properties as invitation homes.
Now, you say $7.5 billion. That's not all in L.A., right?
No, that's nationwide.
Yeah, okay. What specific neighborhoods do you work in where this becomes an issue?
L.A., Inglewood, Gardena, Hawthorne, North Torrance, parts of the Valley, L.A. metro area.
So you get around. Mm-hmm. When a listing goes online, what happens?
A rental listing?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have people that come in and want to rent. We'll pull them up. We usually use the MLS. Being a real estate broker, we use the MLS and look under leases. There is a lot of competition. There's it for any property that's nice, there's a lot of competition.
What about when a home comes up for sale?
There's 20 or 30 offers. If it's priced anywhere decent, there's 20 or 30 offers. They overbid. We put out blind highest and best offers and have them bidding against each other without knowing what the highest bid is.
20 or 30 without knowing what the – oh, my God. That's
I've
amazing.
Got buyers can't find a house. Uh-huh. I can't – no, they can't win a bid.
So these are individuals competing against these institutional investors?
Absolutely.
Mark Alston, again, a real estate broker. John Rigardi is executive editor for the Downtown News. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Warren.
A lot of development going on in the downtown area. There has been for a long time. Do you see the same kind of trend?
Absolutely. And we're seeing a couple really interesting things right now. In the past few years, there has been just a massive surge of apartment building down here. There are now literally dozens of projects, with some estimates of as many as 5,000 units being constructed, right now, right in downtown. In many ways, it's almost similar to 2006, which was before the recession, when you just had huge investments coming right into this area.
So, and these are rentals, not condos.
Exactly, and that's what's really interesting about this. And we do our development issue every 3 or 4 months or so. And during the last one, I would say that about at least 90% of the new projects being worked on right now, if not more than 90%, are rentals. The developers say that the prices that they could fetch while prices are rising, they just aren't quite enough yet to justify the building of for sale condominiums. So instead, you just have all these apartments, all these rental units being built.
Well, shouldn't prices come down if there are that many units?
Well, they theoretically shouldn't. Theoretically, they ultimately will. But you've come to a situation right now where the market has gotten so tight in downtown Los Angeles in the past few years. The estimates are that there are about 400,000 people who work downtown each day. Even with all the recent boom, you still only have about 50,000 total residents in here. So, hey, even if you add 5,000, 6,000 units, you still have vastly more people out here. And from what I hear, traffic in L.A. is getting worse, not better, and people want to live down here.
From what you hear, you're not getting out of town much. John Rigardi, again, executive editor of the Downtown News. You don't just deal with real estate. You deal with politics. What does this mean at Los Angeles City Hall and at the County Board of Supervisors?
You know, it's a great question. It's an important topic because every elected official will always talk about the need to create more affordable housing, more housing that people of all different levels can afford, can get into. If a particularly on the city council, if a council member has the opportunity and there is a market rate project in the area, they will push for and try to get that project to include, say, a 20% what they call affordable component. Now, that can mean different things. It could mean very low-income housing, but it could also apply to what's often referred to as workforce housing, which often is described as secretaries, teachers, even journalists, people who aren't making all that much money but still need a place to live without being pushed way out to the suburbs.
So we heard earlier that in some areas it takes $2,500, $3,000 to get a one-bedroom apartment that described as decent by Pauline O'Connor. Does that sound about right downtown, or are they higher or lower?
It's a mix. There was a study from the USC Kasdan forecast from back in September said that the average rent in downtown is now $1,862. That was from a few months ago. There are some new buildings, some new luxury units that have opened up. We're where one bedrooms are, you know, $2,500, where you do regularly find people charging about $3 a square foot for some of these projects.
Let me just quickly go back to Pauline O'Connor. Do you think that middle-income people are being pushed out of some of these neighborhoods because of the rent?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And John Rigardi, is that certainly true downtown?
Only to a degree. There are a lot of units. You know, long before the building boom, downtown had a huge portion of lower income housing. A lot of that has been protected. So and there's certain neighborhoods in and around Skid Row where no matter how nice the unit, there are still the challenges of living in the area. So certain communities are never going to leave. That said, of course, it still does become more difficult with the rising rents for certainly some younger individuals to find their first places.
Beverly Kenworthy is with us. She's executive director of the California Apartment Association's Los Angeles office, representing developers and landlords in Los Angeles County. Ms. Kenworthy, good to have you on our program.
Thank you for having me.
In New York City, there was a campaign, "The Rent is Too Damn High." Are the rents too high in Los Angeles, or does all this make sense?
Well, I think the rents are, certainly increasing. We know that we're hovering in certain areas about a 4% vacancy rate, and that might be getting a little bit smaller. Landlords and property owners are subject to the market trends just like every other business, and we've seen rents fall, and we've seen them go up again, and we definitely notice sort of this trend upwards. As Paula said, there's really just a huge demand, and she mentioned one of the reasons with the foreclosure crisis and now the difficulty of the bidding wars for single-family homes. But I think we should also point out is that we have a younger generation coming, who would normally be thinking about homeownership but no longer see it as a good investment. And they're looking for the flexibility the rental market has for them, whether it's living close to work, living close to like really good, urban centers, access to transit. So that's also adding, I think, to the demand. And, as a city and as a region, we really do need to take a hard look at what our housing needs are and, if we're planning for them properly.
We heard Mark Alston, the real estate broker, say a moment ago that if you get property, ultimately it's going to go up. Isn't that true? Are these people missing out on an investment if they wanted to stay around long enough that they could make money on?
I think that may or may not be true. I think, they've learned from, they've seen firsthand what the housing bubble and the burst has done. And so that might correct itself over time, I think. But for the time being, the rental industry is providing their needs.
What about the cost of construction? We heard what John Rigardi said about all these new buildings that are going in downtown.
I think, you make a very good point. There's, it isn't just supply and demand. There's a lot of nuances. We live in a highly regulatory environment. It's not easy to develop in this region. Construction costs are very high. The process to entitle a building could take years, and you have no certainty that project will even be completed, based on political factors, all kinds of financial might just at the end not pencil out anymore. So there are a lot of reasons why the cost of housing is so high. Construction costs is one of them, and also just the uncertainty of getting a project through its entitlement process also adds quite a bit of cost.
Beverly Kenworthy at the California Apartment Association's Los Angeles office. John Rigardi, back to you with the Downtown News. What about the relationship of politicians to developers? There's been a long time almost a truism in Los Angeles that developers get what they want.
Yeah, there is, because frequently developers have a lot of money and they are able to contribute to a politician's campaigns, to a politician's office holder account, to a politician's preferred charities. There's a reason that developers, along with their relatives and children, are always frequently giving. As Beverly mentioned, it is very, very hard to get these projects approved frequently, and you definitely want the support of your council representative. So yeah, the relationship is very tight and likely will continue to be that way.
Back to Mark Alston, our real estate broker. Do you see what we heard Beverly Kenworthy describe, that there are young couples and even families who would rather rent than buy?
I do see that, especially amongst young people. And what I'm finding really interesting is, you know, our city has typical people that live in certain neighborhoods, people in certain economic levels, and we're starting to see people who would not normally live in certain neighborhoods migrate to that neighborhood because of the rental price. It's an interesting change right now in the diversity makeup of neighborhoods.
What's the impact on the community when that happens?
The more rentals in a community, and again, I'm a real estate broker, so I deal mostly in sales. The more transient a community becomes, the less stable it becomes. The less the schools are impacted. They're building more convenience stores to handle more of a transient and lower income type of tenant. It's changing the neighborhoods.
Beverly Kenworthy, what do you say to that?
You know, I haven't seen. I mean, I don't know if this issue's been studied. I haven't seen evidence to that. You know, that may or may not be true. I know that my members are looking at, you know, young professionals, you know, who, I mean, a lot of my members are developing in downtown, kind of capturing that market of people who want to live there. So I'm not familiar with those trends in other, you know, in certain parts of the cities, but it sounds plausible.
So, Pauline O'Connor, quickly back to you, editor for LACurbed.com. Your advice seems to be have patience.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as if you look at, you know, the great story of downtown's amazing comeback, a lot of it has to do with the fact of the, you know, the buildings were the adaptive use things. And now we're seeing, say, in Echo Park, there have been the small lot ordinances that have allowed more, you know, people are getting, you can get a little house, so you still get a house, but it's smaller. And so there, people thinking out, you know, outside of the traditional kind of developing, I think, is the way to go, is happening. But as far as just renting goes, you just do need to be maybe open to widening your neighborhood range or just what you think that your needs are.
Still cheaper to live here than it is in New York.
Oh yeah, you know, there's always the there's not a broker fee like there is in New York. That seems, you know, I don't know how that ever got to be the normal thing where you have to pay 10% or 15% of a year's rent just to get in the door.
Okay, Pauline O'Connor, thanks to you. Thanks to Mark Alston, real estate broker, John Rigardi with the Downtown News, and Beverly Kenworthy with the California Apartment Association. Good to have you all. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
In a moment, some local chefs fight hunger and poverty, not just on Thanksgiving, but all year round. On Which Way LA.
You're listening to Which Way LA from KCRW. Share your comments about today's show at kcrw.com/whichwayla. Or join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter, at WWLA.
Warren Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on Which Way LA. So many people want to feed LA's homeless that shelters ask volunteers to sign up in advance during Thanksgiving week. But some local restaurants have launched programs that last year-round. Later, we'll talk with Roy Choi, who about giving poor kids experience in the food industry. First, the restaurant chain Tender Greens and the Sustainable Life Project. That's a 3-month internship for foster children who might never have been employed. It ranges from using a knife in the kitchen to farming. KCRW producer Evan George reports that if they stick with it, Tender Greens guarantees a job.
When you turn 18, are you an adult? You are if you're in foster care. 20,000 kids each year start fending for themselves because they no longer qualify for foster homes. If they don't have a high school degree or a mentor, landing a job might be the only thing keeping them off the streets. When the owners of Tender Greens consider donating to a homeless youth charity, they realize they have something better than money or food. They have jobs. Ones that you can do without a long resume. Jobs that let you learn by getting your hands dirty. That's why Joshua Serbier is knee-deep in a trailer of grain, shoveling pig feed. Joshua is one of 8 students who got a spot in the spring semester of the Tender Greens program. They call it the Sustainability Life Project. It's basically a three-month unpaid internship. Students work in the restaurant 8 hours a week and take classes in everything from using a knife to sourcing ingredients. If they stick with it, Tender Greens guarantees them a job. Today's lesson is what it takes to raise animals. Two students and two chefs are here working at Reride Ranch, a family-run farm 70 miles outside of Los Angeles.
We're going to be feeding all the hogs, and I got the goats all fed, so we got to do the hogs and the horses and the turkey and the geese.
That's Lefty Ayers. He raises the pigs the restaurant buys for bacon and pork belly. So the second lesson is really seeing where the ingredients come from. We're downhill from the farmhouse in a field of fruit trees where more than 150 Berkshire pigs root around in the dirt. Some lay in makeshift pens, others roam free. Joshua dumps raw almonds, grain, and a probiotic powder into a wheelbarrow and chucks it around the yard. He looks kind of uncomfortable holding a shovel, but he keeps at it for more than an hour, trying to impress the chefs. I ask him how he found the program, and he says the counselors at Covenant House, where he's been living, encouraged him to apply.
It's a homeless shelter for youth 18 to 24, a crisis shelter. They help people get back on their feet. You know, you don't have to pay for rent. They help with employment skills and try to get you a job and education. It's been a long time since I'm cooked, but I really enjoy cooking. So I really want to get a job with Tender Greens. And I'm working on my GED as well right now.
For a 21-year-old, he has a lot on his plate. When he was 13, his mom had a stroke and his dad left them. He'd always been homeschooled, but now he had to stay home just to take care of her 24/7. When they didn't make rent 1 month, they got evicted. They lived in a tent by the freeway for 8 months. One night, she slipped and hit her head, starting a downward spiral of hospital visits she didn't recover from. Joshua spent the previous afternoon scattering his mom's ashes in Malibu. Food can be an agent of change. That's what Eric Oberholzer tells me. He's the head chef and one of the founders of Tender Greens. When 6 out of the 8 kids in his first class graduated last December, he hired them as cashiers and bussers. But the group graduating this month is likely to be smaller. Several students dropped out.
They're coming to us with some tough life experiences. And unfortunately, those life experiences continue to get in the way, whether there's some issues with addiction, family issues, pregnancy.
Legal problems also get in the way, or emotional issues. Some students just can't show up on time. That's not the case with Angelina Smith. She finished the program last year after living on the streets for a while. Now she works full-time bussing tables at the Hollywood restaurant. Without it, she says she doesn't know where she'd be.
It changed my entire life in many different ways because it actually was, or it is, my first job that I have ever had. I would love to, in time, you know, prove myself to the company that I'm worthy of them and that, I would love to be in management at some point.
Oberholzer, who teaches the culinary skills part of the program, says it gives them training they can pick up and take anywhere. And the field trips, what he calls the farm-to-fork experience, shows them that the food industry is hard work but offers all sorts of jobs.
It's rewarding for me to see these kids grow and come out of their shells or start to dream bigger, dream beyond some of the disappointments that they've faced in early life.
The ones who stick it out, they talk about the program like it's something way better than an internship. It's a chance to finally support themselves on their own. This week, Joshua starts his new job, paid and full-time.
That was producer Evan George reporting for KCIW's Good Food program earlier this year. Since then, a new class of 6 students has graduated and 4 are working for Tender Greens. The next class starts in January. Now we're joined by Roy Choi. He's the chef behind the Kogi food trucks that sell Korean tacos. He's teamed up with South LA high school students for his latest restaurant concept, which is called the Three Worlds Cafe on Central Avenue. Roy Choi, good to have you on our program.
Hi, it's good to be here with you, Warren.
All right, to tell us about the Three Worlds Cafe.
Three Worlds Cafe is a wonderful little cafe on Central Boulevard. It started actually 3 years ago on the low. We started in Jefferson High School through Route Down LA and also through some of the educators there and the students. And we just started serving fruit. We started serving fruit at the school. We got fresh fruit. We got frozen fruit from Dole. We got a lot of funding. But, you know, we really couldn't make it known. We kind of just did it. And, you know, the kids really responded to it. And so after a couple years on campus and just doing it, what happened was this cafe opened up by the CRCD. They had this place on Central, and they needed something to fill it. So,
that's the Coalition for Responsible Community Development.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we filled it, and we built the cafe. We painted it, and now we have it set up as a work-study program, also free Wi-Fi, you know, cappuccinos, espressos, fruit smoothies. You know, it doesn't sound like a huge deal, but... you know, down in South LA, to have a cafe like this with free Wi-Fi, a place to go to do your homework, to just hang out, maybe clear your head, you know, it's a good thing, man. It really is.
And the food is healthy.
Yeah. You know, it's all fruit-based and, you know, really good coffee from a local roaster in Pasadena, Zona Rosa. I want to get really great breads in there from some of our local bakers. So just like I would build any other cafe in any other part of the city, I want to... This is my next project, you know what I mean?
So is Three Worlds Cafe sort of like an oasis in the food desert that we hear exists in South L.A. and other parts of the city?
I hope it's a start. I mean, I'm not going to stand on some soapbox and say that we're the answer. We're just starting. You know, it just takes care and dedication and day-to-day work. You know, we have this problem that we're not going to solve in a day. But if we don't start something... No matter how small it is, we're never going to solve it, you know. So, just, you know, South L.A. is filled with children, man, filled with children and youth, and there are not many restaurants and not many jobs, man, you know. And they're beautiful kids, and they deserve the right to have great food, no matter what, and so, affordable food.
So how many of them actually work in the restaurant and learn how to put it all together?
Well, right now we got five employees. Two of them are three of them are former students of Jefferson. We have a work-study program where the students can come over and just hang out and do their thing. Lately we've been having a lot of kids just come over, do their homework, hang out. We have open mic nights on Wednesdays. We do group-like stuff on the weekends, Saturdays, you know. And so everyone's starting to use it. More and more I see it's becoming a part of the community. For sure.
You gave a talk in August in Copenhagen, Denmark, where you said chefs can do anything. When a chef speaks, people listen. When a chef does, people follow. Elaborate on that and tell us how that's given you, obviously, a sense of social responsibility.
I'm glad you picked up on that. You know, that's the truth. If you've ever been around a chef, it's the way we operate. We're very confident people. We're not the richest people on the planet, but you can never say no to a chef. You know what I mean? Never. What's the term? It's yes, chef. So I just took that term and that existence, and I thought about it across the board. If that way of life exists for a chef, that's the way we look at life. So why not apply that philosophy towards everything? Hey, we got a problem here. We're not feeding a certain part of our city the right way. And chefs are going to open up shop and bring the best flavors in the world to the places that don't have many of these restaurants. Everyone's going to say, yes, chef. Of course they're going to say, yes, chef, because the chef is doing it. So all it takes is chefs to go do it. Because what will happen is the food will speak for itself, and everything will change from there. Sometimes we get caught up in words too much, and we try to be too cerebral about things. Maybe it's not our brain that needs to change food deserts. And maybe it's our soul.
Roy Choi, Los Angeles is a better place because of you. Thanks a lot for being on our program.
Thank you, Warren. Much respect.
He's the man behind the Kogi food trucks. He's also author of L.A. Sun, My Life, My City, My Food. Remember, you can join the conversation on our Which Way L.A. Facebook page on To the Point in a Moment, America, the Nation of Workaholics.